Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sorento has landed.
Welcome to Sports Day. Great to have your company. The match just underway in the AFC Champions League. Perth Glory against Ulsan, and it is nil all after about 7 or 8 minutes of play there in the cricket. We'll keep you up to date. Australia, 6 for 374. Steve Smith, he's unbelievable. 100 off just 62 balls, the third fastest century ever in one-day international cricket. I'll tell you what, Glenn Maxwell was smashing him. He made 45 off 19 before he was dismissed. He has the fastest 51-ball 100 he scored, and Aaron Finch also scored a century in that total, 114 off 124. Balls. Currently, India are 4 for 150. There's a T20 international taking place. The West Indies made 7 for 180 off 16 overs. Kieran Pollard was the star there. 75 off 37 balls. New Zealand in reply are 5 for 159. There's only a couple of overs to go, so that one's going to go down to the wire. We're not far away from practice at the Bahrain Grand Prix. Of course, Lewis Hamilton has a commanding lead. He's not going to be beaten in that. And there's plenty to talk about, and we'll be having a chat to Craig Vozzo after our first break. We've got a $50 voucher thanks to the wonderful team at the Bottle-O tonight. You've got to love your local, the Bottle-O. It's the Friday free-for-all, so anything that's on your mind in the wonderful world of sport, please pick up the phone, give us a buzz right now, and you'll be first to air. But good evening to my co-host tonight, Paul Haseby. How are you, Hayes?
Going well, Carl. Class is permanent. There's no doubt about that. Form is obviously temporary. But looking at a couple of those players, Aaron Finch, he couldn't make many runs when he was in the IPL. And Steve Smith, too. He had his battles. Really struggling over there to work on his technique, but back on their home decks, a lot of confidence. They're able to belt it around the park. Hopefully it's not a precursor to what the summer might hold. I'm hoping for a really competitive one-day international series, T20 series, and then we head into the test. But normally, sometimes, Carl, when a team starts poorly, like the Indians have at the moment, they're in trouble for 151. Josh Hazlewood has been very good with 3 wickets. It's led to a pretty poor series here in the Australian summer.
Yeah, I've got to say, though, the Indians got off to an absolute flying start, and then, unfortunately, they lost the wicket of Agarwal, and he'd made 22 off 18. And then Darwin sort of has been controlled. He's only 45 off 51 balls now, so he's sort of gone into his shell a little bit. Given that he's the batsman in, Virat Kohli came in and made 21 off 21, which is probably well below a strike rate that's required for him. And, you know, really, Pandya is the guy that's got the best of the strike rate of all the Indian batsmen thus far at 141 at the moment, with his 34 not out off 24. But they're no chance of running down the 374 that the Australians made today. And I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, mate, I think that Finch and Smith actually lost their contracts, didn't they, in the IPL going forward. So, you know, on the back of what is really disappointing performances for them over there, to come back and to have the impact that they've had here to kick off our Australian summer against a very well-credentialed Indian team who come here with some very good names. And, you know, I reckon that when you look at Shami and Chahal and Bumrah and Jadeja and what they bowled today and what they offered up, they'd be really disappointed because they just, I think, failed to keep pressure on. When pressure needed to be applied, they were too short. They got absolutely taken to the cleaners by the Australian batters, and well done.
Hasn't been the best lead-up, we must admit that, for both sides, really, with the quarantine that they've had to go through. But there was also a great tribute too, Carl, for the late Dean Jones, and also Phil Hughes died tragically, obviously, 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. So a bit of emotion at the moment as we're watching this game, but the Aussies should be able to cruise to victory from this point in time.
All right, we've got a big show coming your way. We are going to have to take an early break because Craig Vozzo is going to join us. Justin Prentice, we're going to talk about the horse that you can get involved with, Hayes and I, at Gloucester Park. It's called Dream Walker. We're hoping for some big things. We'll find out from the man himself, Justin Prentice. He picked the horse, he trains the horse, so he can hopefully tell us a lot more about it. It'd be nice to catch up with Nathan Charles out of the 7 o'clock news. He's the new CEO of Rugby WA and former player at our Western Force. And while we're talking about coaches, Alexander Aparkas, big job stepping into the shoes of a great in Bobby Despotovsky with the Glory and the W team, Hayes. And, of course, you know, given the signings this week, they've certainly got to, I think anyway, a good opportunity to be able to send a little bit of a statement. They're going for a lot of the homegrown talent, which is nice to see.
Don't think they've got much choice at the moment. It's hard to attract overseas players, and also, obviously, to get players from interstate is difficult as well. Obviously, Sam Kerr and a few of the bigger names here in Australian women's soccer applying their craft overseas and doing pretty well. That's going to detract a little bit from this competition. It could have a few challenges up ahead, but I like what he's done so far with a few of the interviews that I've read, and he's very well credentialed for this position and just doing a bit of research. Loves study, Carl, so look forward to catching up with him and talking about his pathway into coaching because he's still very young.
Yeah, I want to ask him about a master's degree in sports coaching, mate. I wonder what that actually means and what they put you through. The AFC Champions League, now it's still nil all. They're 12 minutes into that. Britt Taylor's also going to join us to preview what is a huge day of racing, Winterbottom Stakes Day out there at Sunny Ascot. So we'll have a chat to Britt later on in this hour as well. Hopefully she can tip us into a winner or two. But we'll clear a commitment on the other side. We will be joined by Craig Vozzo from the West Coast Eagles next.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Let's get into the hot topic for the West Coast Eagles for expert car servicing that you can rely on. You visit repcoservice.com, and it is great to have Craig Vozzo from the West Coast Eagles on the program. Welcome, Craig. Thanks for joining us on this Friday night.
Pleasure, gents.
Now, obviously, there's been a fair bit of change at the footy club. Some rookies that aren't really rookies that have been moved onto that rookie list, Craig. It's quite incredible. In fact, all of these experienced players across the league that have been shoveled onto that. I think we've got to come up with a new name, don't you?
Yeah, sounding that way, Carl, that's for sure. We're getting more and more experienced players going back onto rookie lists, and I think it's largely with the change to the TPP that's been prescribed last Friday. Clubs are scurrying to keep people, and the rookie list is being used for that purpose, it appears.
Is the whole process getting a bit too complex? No doubt you're across it and your staff are across it, but for the general public, it can be hard to understand.
Yeah, definitely, Paul. So this year's a bit of an unusual one because AFL have reached an agreement with the players whereby 9% have to come off the total player payments for the year. So the rookie list largely... the incomes of players sits outside of the total player payments. So we've got certain players moving back from each of the clubs to a rookie list, mainly for TPP management purposes rather than anything else. And remembering too that the rules have changed such that rookies can play from day one without there having to be a long-term injury. They can just play from round one onwards. So it's certainly evolved, and it's a really different look to when originally rookies were brought in, that's for sure.
Certainly has. Now, run us through the thought process on some of your re-signings. Archie, Hutchings, Vardy, and also Jermaine Jones. You certainly made them wait.
Yeah, that wasn't pleasant for them, nor for us. But we needed to have some certainty on where the list sizes were going to fall. And then, of course, the total player payments. So that was a really uncomfortable process for them and for us. But was unavoidable. We ended up retaining Jermaine Jones and Brendan Archie. They were both already rookies on our rookie list this year. So they got contracts into 2021. Vards obviously was pretty much tied up with Tom Hickey and his decision to leave Sydney. And then we needed to just finalise our contract with him, which we're able to do. Last week, which is great, into this week. And then Hutch, his was, as I mentioned earlier to you, as regards some of the clubs, he was the one from our club, as an example, that has moved back from the primary list to the rookie list, largely for our TPP management purposes. But he'll no doubt present in his professional way and give himself the very best opportunity of success moving forward. We don't treat our rookies any differently. They're our primary list players anyway, and they know that.
Unfortunately, that meant that Lewis Jetta didn't get a contract, a very tough decision because he's been a pretty handy player and a lot of leadership too to some of your younger players.
Hugely, Paul. Yeah, that was one we made with a real heavy heart. Catching up, Trevor Nisbet and I, with Lewis next week. To start working on the next phase of his life. That was really, really difficult. He's had a really tough year, and that was a tough decision in a tough climate, for sure.
What was, I suppose, the reasons why he missed out? I mean, because, you know, given that it has been the year that it has been, he's a more than capable backup player. I thought he might have been able to be squeezed in, given a couple of the others that have been named this week.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's a fair comment. From our point of view, we've seen quite significant growth from a number of our young backs moving forward. And we've been really happy with that. And we've obviously added Alex Witherden to that group as well. So Louis ended up basically training with our forward group and playing when he was available and not injured in the back half of the year up forward. From our point of view, we feel we're in a pretty good space in the forward area as well. So it was a squeeze. It was a difficult decision. These things are everyone has an opinion on them, and I can respect yours, Carl. But we decided to move differently.
Yeah. Now, Daniel Venables, how's he going, mate? Because obviously he's been out now for a long time with those concussion issues.
He has. He's made really good progress over the last 3 to 4 months in particular. Darren Glass and I had a good meeting with him, his manager, and his father earlier in the week. So he wants to give himself every prospect of playing in 2021. We're going to be guided by our medical guys, as will he. But that's looking like it could be a possibility, and we've still got a little bit of time to make that decision.
And another player that, look, I'm hoping that he can be back playing some footy at some point is of course, Rioli. Now, he still hasn't had a hearing. Is there any progression being made to him actually getting a hearing so that he actually knows what his future actually looks like?
Yeah, so we're expecting a hearing in the next month. And then the decision, normally with these things, Carl, they're, you go before the tribunal and then the tribunal defer and come up with a decision. So we won't have a decision next month, within a month, but we'll have a hearing and then we'll be waiting on a decision after that, and that'll tell us exactly where things sit after that. So probably with all that in mind, I would have thought sometime in January we'd hope to have a final position.
How many draft picks do you expect to take in the upcoming draft? And, of course, most of them are late picks.
Yeah, Paul, we're expecting and planning only to take one or two picks this year and maybe one or two rookies as well. It's not going to be a year where we're going to do much in terms of numbers through the draft, and that's been a deliberate strategy on our part given the lack of disclosed form of the Victorian, Paul. Our guys have been working off vision from 2019 for those guys, as well as two pracky games. So that's always a bit of a concern. We're going to limit our involvement in this pool.
The focus now turns to the AFLW competition. No doubt the girls are training hard at the moment. A story breaking last night in the West around the potential for a hub in WA. Have you been privy to some of those discussions?
Yeah, look, Richard O'Connell and Adam Searle drive that program for us, and I've been kept up to speed with all that. That's exciting news for our girls. If there is a hub over here, that's the very best scenario for us. Certainly, it's something we're encouraging, and it'll be wonderful for our girls and also the West Australian public. They've been training really hard under Daniel and Daniel Pratt, and we're hoping to make good progress in that area this year.
Craig, the AFL fixtures I'm hearing are going to be announced the first week of December, so that's just around the corner. And I'm also hearing that they're going to have a floating fixture announced. Is that what you're led to believe, or can you give us any details on that? What do you know?
You know more than me, Carl. You're ahead of me on that one. I've heard talk around a floating fixture, which is not a great thing from a footy club perspective in terms of planning. And in terms of our commercial aspect, is not good at all. So we're hoping it's not that, and that we have a definite fixture that we can plan around. But we'll see, and hopefully we know as soon as possible.
Elliot Yeo, still having some complications with that osteitis pubis. Now, this is something that I had throughout my career, and I did go to have surgery, and once I had the surgery, it was fixed. No doubt you've had those discussions with the medical department, but can you give us an update?
Yeah, he's progressing slowly, I think's the word, but positively still. But it is slow progress, Hayes, and you having had it, you know exactly how that works. Mm. We've had plenty of these in the past. Probably 80 to 90% of them we've avoided surgery, and you know 10-15% we've had surgery. The last one we had was probably Nick, and it was a different type to this one. Our doctors are still quite confident that we can manage and get him right conservatively, and so that's the path we've gone down, and we're confident that it'll achieve the outcome.
Nice to chat, mate. Thank you very much. Nice and comprehensive. I know all the Eagles fans love to be kept up to date. We appreciate your time tonight here on Sports Day.
Pleasure, guys. Speak soon.
Good on you, Craig Vozzo there, and you'll be blown away with the car air conditioning service at Repco Authorised Service. Your book at repcoservice.com. We'll come back with your calls after this, 922-118-82. It's our Friday free-for-all. We've got that $50 voucher thanks to the wonderful team at the Bottle-O. Great range, friendly service, and they're independently owned by the locals, of course. You've got to love the local, the Bottle-O. Your call's next.
Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sorento has landed.
Now, just with so much sporting action happening live and updating that, I can tell you that the Kiwis have fallen agonisingly short of defeating the West Indies. West Indies 7 for 180 off their 16 overs. Kieran Pollard, 75 off 37 balls. New Zealand, 5 for 179. So they've lost by one measly little run in that T20 International being played at Eden Park. Locally, just updating the cricket, Australia, 6 for 374 off their 50 overs. The Indians going okay. They've hit the halfway mark, and they haven't lost any more wickets, thankfully. 26.2 overs now, 4 for 183. Panja is 55 off 42, and Darwin is 55 off 62. So they're going to need for those two to hang around for a little bit longer. And still no score so far in the AFC Champions League. Ulsan and Perth Glory doing battle tonight. And at the moment, in the 33rd minute of play, it's a Group F stage match. It is nil all in that contest there. But, Hayes, just going back to the cricket that you and I saw a little bit earlier and the stroke play of Steve Smith and, you know, the respect that he played to Phil Hughes. I think that we saw the emotion that unfolded prior to the match getting underway with Phil Hughes and Dean Jones, obviously, sadly, losing their lives for very different reasons. But for Steve Smith to then get out there and score the third fastest century ever was just unbelievable. 922-118-82 if you'd like to join us tonight, by the way. We've got a $50 voucher to the Bottle-O. Hayes and I can't take it home, so you might as well call in and try and give yourself a chance of winning that. But it was a very, very good batting performance.
Yeah, it was, and he wasn't in great touch coming into the tournament as well. And we often think about Steve Smith and we just laud what he does in the Test arena. He's one of the best in the world, and if not one of the best that we've seen here in Australia throughout time as well. But he can do it at the One Day Internationals, and you think about him as being a bit more of a plodder, and he's not a fast scorer. But when it's time to go, he can do it in this format, and he can do it in the T20s. And I just look at the team at the moment, and maybe it's a sign of how Justin Langer selects his team, that he does have a lot of the Test players that he believes that if you can play Tests and you've got really good technique, you can then apply that to the One Day Internationals. I reckon there was a time where we probably went towards some of the bigger hitters, the faster scorers, but they weren't the better players. And I like this formula. Marnus Labuschagne is another classic example that he probably didn't show too much leading into his debut in the One Day Internationals, that he was up to it at this level. He certainly did it at Test level, and then he got that opportunity. And maybe that augurs well for Cameron Green as well, who's done a really good job in the Sheffield Shield. He's yet to really dominate the Big Bash and the One Day Internationals that he has played. But Justin Langer, of that train of thought, that if you can play, you can play, and that means you can play all the formats.
Yeah. Now, when you have a look at the makeup of the Australian cricket team, no surprise to see only the one change. That was widely speculated that Steve Smith would come in for Mitch Marsh. And look, given what Finch and Maxwell, 45 of 19, I mean, he was absolutely on fire, given a licence to hit them around, and, you know, it probably wasn't something that was unexpected given the start that the Australian team got off to. Warner certainly played his part as well. Haven't really spoken about him, but there's not too many opportunities, is there? I mean, when you think about the makeup of our test team, and you think about the quality of player there, Marcus Stoinis gets an opportunity, makes a duck. You know, all of a sudden, he immediately becomes a man that gets spoken about as being the player under pressure.
Well, there's so many to potentially come in. That's the great thing, isn't it, right now about Australian cricket? The depth is unbelievable. The Sheffield Shield, albeit on some really good batting pitches over there in South Australia, which you've spoken about a number of times. But in the last probably 3 to 5 years, I don't think we've had that depth. I don't think we've had players banging down the door for selection. And I think heading towards the next World Cup, I reckon we'll be a real good chance with the players that we currently have in there and the bowling lineup. And even the bowling lineup, it does resemble pretty much that of the test team, doesn't it? And going back 3 to 5 years, the bowling lineups of the one-day internationals were different. They were more specialised, shorter format players. But Justin Langer has it in his mind that if you can play test level and you're good enough to do that, then you can apply that in the one-day internationals. And Josh Hazlewood, he's a case in point there. He's got the 3 wickets tonight. He was left out of many one-day internationals and didn't get too many opportunities through the World Cup.
You know what? The thing that I hated, Hayes, and I think where a lot of cricket lovers, purists, got a little bit disenfranchised with Australian cricket is that we had this constant change. You had a test team, you had a one-day team, you had a T20 team, but in some cases there was this rotation policy that they started to involve in the process, and to me it wasn't about picking the very best player. And look, I'm glad since Justin Langer has taken over that we've gone back to what I would call a lot more of a traditional picking the very best players. If you can play test cricket, you can play one-day cricket. And, you know, I think the class is shining through. It certainly has tonight. And, you know, it was a remarkable score earlier. 6 for 374. India 4 for 188 in reply.
Given it's a bit easier, Carl, isn't it, when you've got a good schedule like we do at the moment. When you have too many games going on, and we've got the Big Bash coming up as well, you just can't have all the players doing everything. But you're right. Justin Langer has certainly made that point. And doesn't it make a big difference? Because, you know, when you're in the team, you've got to work bloody hard to stay in. And when you're out of the team, you have to absolutely bang down the door to get that prized possession.
Sorry to cut you off, but the thing is, everyone says it's hard. Mate, T20 cricket is 20 overs, right? You bowl 4 overs, mate. One-day international cricket is one day. It's 50 overs. Seriously? You're only allowed to bowl 10 overs? As a batsman, if you can do what Smith did today, you know, that's as hard as it gets. It's not that hard. So from my perspective, the best players should be playing all forms of the game. You shouldn't just be, you know, picking a specialised team to play T20, ODIs and test cricket, because the best should be able to involve themselves across all formats. Let's go to Steve in Riverton. Join in. What do you reckon? You might think I'm barking up the wrong tree, but if you do, I don't care. I've got my opinion. You've got yours. Give it to us. 922-1182. $50 Bottle-O voucher to give away. Got to love your local, the Bottle-O. Welcome, Steve.
Yeah, hi, Carl. How you going?
Good.
I'm here to support you. I know you've been angry this week, mate, so I'm not here to go against you.
I haven't been that angry, mate.
I totally agree with you. I've got 2 points. Yeah. You know, like you said, you know, one of these guys, you know, Smith went out and batted for a long time. It's great. But the bowlers, you know, at the end, they only have to bowl 60 deliveries. You know, they've done nothing much else today. Obviously, they filled. Yet Jacques Callis never missed a game, and he'd be batting and bowling both and would play T20, play the test, and play the one-dayers. And, you know, the resilience was there. The other thing I'm wondering is, and what you guys think, that with this COVID, and they realise, well, maybe it's not going to be there forever for me, and it's not guaranteed to be there, where the rotation might be a little bit more difficult. The players might be going, well, hang on a sec, I don't know, I might be playing next month because of what's happened. Whether that's going to change the mindset of the players wanting to rotate and be rested all the time.
I think sports science played a big part with it too, and I reckon Justin Langer has got a handle on that, where he's taken back control of Australian cricket, and they did do a big survey on that and tried to find out as much information and an investigation into it, and I think he's taken it back and got control of the way that the players are managed, which is important. But you also look at the women, Carl, and how many games they were playing in a short space of time. They're playing, obviously, T20 internationals, but they were backing up from day to day, and they're putting in just as much effort with the bowling and the batting and fielding that they do as well.
Yeah, just look, from what Steve has just said then, I think straight away we give him the $50 bottle of voucher, Hayes, because he agreed with me. But don't you reckon? I think when you have a look at the overall picture and the way that, you know, Australian cricket has now gone, they've introduced some young players, but they're still making them earn their stripes. And I think what's really important here, and I've always been an advocate, a very strong advocate for not just giving someone an opportunity when they don't necessarily deserve it. The players before them, and I can extend this into, say, you know, Leighton Hewitt, and Sam Stosur, who you said, you know, she should just retire because she's no good. She's not winning any Grand Slam tournaments. But if you're still good enough to participate, and when you have a look at, say, young female tennis players, I mean, how many have been able to jump over the top of Sam Stosur? How many have been able to, say, be as competitive as Leighton Hewitt? Now, there's probably only two men, and there wouldn't be many women right now that we can say, Ash Barty obviously, that have been as competitive. So for me, you stick true. Justin Langer's been loyal. I think loyalty is something that you can't buy for tree. Trust and respect go into play, I think, with that. So it's been really good to see what he's been able to instill back into, I think, the regime of Australian cricket. And I think it seems like, I mean, I haven't heard too many rumours coming out of Australian cricket, Hayes. I haven't seen too many rumblings coming out of Australian cricket. There's been situations probably under a couple of the previous coaches where there's been some rumblings, but right now it doesn't seem to be like that.
No, it's stable, and when you're winning, that certainly helps, and I think that's the culture that Justin Langer has certainly built. Obviously, he had some tough times early on, taking over when everything happened with Steve Smith, David Warner and Cam Bancroft as well, and he even admitted that he probably got a bit carried away with a lot of the outside noise that goes on in world sport these days, but he's a cool head, and he's got them going very well at the moment. It wouldn't surprise me if we have a really good test series and then head towards the next World Cup. I reckon we'd just about start favourites with the amount of talent we have.
All right, just updating sport. We'll have a chat to Norm in a moment, but Beijing FC 2-0 up against Melbourne Victory, and they're only 42 minutes into their clash, pretty much running side by side the Perth Glory's clash at the moment, and I'm happy to report it is still nil all in the first half, 39 into the 40th minute of that clash. And just updating the cricket right now, the Indians are 4 for 201, 29 overs have been bowled. They're chasing down 375 for victory. G'day, Norm.
G'day, look, hi. I think you're short of time. I wanted to ask about some premedal issues, but I've done it this time. But I want to say about cricket.
You're right.
This is only me. This cricket, I couldn't care less. Now, I can understand with the COVID season that, you know, that they need the money from Foxtel. But half of these guys are making squillions in India, in that league over there. They're making millions. They've all got $8 million houses. Half the population don't have Foxtel. And it's annoying to hear long conversations. Look, good luck to people who've got it. It's just annoying to hear long conversations about something you haven't seen. And good luck to you, but I'm just not interested. And then they want people to turn up at their test matches. It happened last year before COVID, didn't it? We had those pre-season games. A lot of people would like to have seen. I don't know what they were, but we couldn't see them either.
So and then are you watching the cricket tonight, Norm, or not?
No, I don't have Foxtel. I'm in the half of the population who don't have it. And there's very good reasons. A lot of people are paying even school fees and things and battling to do it. Anyway, but I'll just, is there time to ask about a quick question about Fremantle?
Yeah, quick, go.
Okay. Okay, just I was going to ask, Hayes, I'm really curious to know how Joel Hamling's going and Alex Pearson. One question. If Brennan Cox is moved, I've heard word that he actually thinks he can play in the midfield. Matt, now, I don't know if that's ridiculous or not, because would you agree, Hayes, particularly as a midfielder, he's a pretty smart footballer. And, like, you could say he's too slow, but I think he's very smart. Michael Barlow wasn't fast. Is it possible that that he has got the nous and he would give size and marking around the ground? Is that possible that he could play midfield? That's what I'm asking. Can you quickly tell me how is Joel Hamling?
Everything's possible, but there's just no need at Fremantle at the moment. They've got enough midfielders coming through. So keep him in those positions that he's been playing so well. He may have to go forward this year. And Joel Hamling, he's been training really hard in the gym, I saw on a news piece. And he is running, and Alex Pearce running as well. The next challenge will obviously be getting back with the group and doing some of the match simulation drills that have hindered him in the past. But all things progressing well. And I think by round one, they'll both be available.
Good on you, Norm. Thanks for your call. 922-11882 if you'd like to join us. Britt Taylor will join us next from Sky Racing.
Welcome back to Sports Day, and we needed to get an expert on to the program tonight to talk about the big racing that's happening out at Ascot tomorrow. 10 races on the program, the first at 12:24, but this young lady will be up bright and early before her commitments at Sky Racing to ride a few horses. We're talking about Britt Taylor, and she joins us here on Sports Day. Welcome, Britt.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get into the business end of the program and tipping us hopefully a couple of winners for the big day tomorrow, what time will your day start tomorrow?
My day will start at about 4:30 tomorrow. Have plenty of horses to ride before heading off to the races. So it's a nice early start and get all the horses worked in the morning and then off to the races for a big 10 race program.
How many do you typically work in a morning?
Probably around 8 in the morning. So on a race day morning, it's pretty quick. My brother runs a very tight ship and he has them all saddled up and ready to go. I basically just jump on and off all morning. And then as soon as I'm on the last one, I race to the car because a girl getting ready for the races, it's quite an involved process, all the hair and the makeup. So I'll be doing a bit of a rush job of it tomorrow, to be honest. But hopefully it's somewhat presentable by the time we go live.
You must have it down, Pat. And no doubt you've got a lot of outfits to choose from as well, given the amount of times you do go to the races. But it is a big one. It's the second of the big races, the Winter Bottom, trekking the favourite. Who are you heading towards in this one and how do you think it'll play out?
Yeah, it's trekking for me. This race has just been dominated by the East Coasters in the last 10 years. Only two Western Australian horses have won the race in the last decade, and I see no reason why the trend isn't going to continue here. Trekking is a two-time Group 1 winner. Two starts ago, he contested the Everest. We just know what sort of race the Everest is, what kind of sprinters it attracts, and you know, it was a really, really quick tempo that day, and he was travelling comfortably. He finished fourth. A week later, he backed up into the Group 1 Manicato and finished second. And the one query I probably had on trekking was that had it been too much to run in an Everest, to run a week later in a Manicato, that's pretty taxing stuff. And then the biggest thing of that was that because of COVID and the flight situation, there weren't many flights coming here to the West. So the flight actually left on the Monday, I'm pretty sure, after the Manicato. So he's running a Manicato on a Friday night and on Monday has had to get on the plane to come across the country. So that can be a big ask for a horse, but from everything that they've said, this horse is just as tough as they come and he's settled into his surrounds really well. And he trialled on Monday. The trial looked impressive. So he has got to be awfully hard to beat.
Who do you feel is the best of the locals?
Well, whilst my head says trekking, my heart says Rock Magic. I just can't even explain what the scenes would look like at Ascot if this horse got up. We saw remarkable scenes last week when William Pike won the railway with the chant, Pikey, 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 when he came back in. I've spoken to people who have been involved in racing a lot longer than I have, and no one has ever seen that sort of adoration for a jockey coming back. And for the horse, Rock Magic, he's an 11-year-old. This is his fifth Winter Bottom Stakes. Ganjemi bought him in 2014. When they got him, he won four of his first five races. And at the end of that preparation, he contested his first winter bottom. Now, in 2020, to be going for his fifth winter bottom, it's just the most remarkable story of longevity to be an 11-year-old and racing at the highest level. It just simply doesn't happen. And I really don't think he's in there making up the numbers. He gets the blinkers on for the first time with Team Ganjemi. I keep asking them why the blinkers now. They said, well, better late than never. As an 11-year-old, they thought we may as well give it a crack. And he worked in them on Tuesday morning, and my brother was there for Sky Racing doing all the interviews. And he said Jared Noske was very, very bullish when he came back and said, you know, that was some of his best work ever, essentially, with the blinkers on. So I'd like to think that the racing gods could be looking upon Ascot tomorrow and deliver a fairy tale in Rock Magic.
What about in a few of the other races, Britt, as the support acts? Is there anything else that you like on the program?
Well, I think if you find a winner tomorrow, you're going to be on very good terms with yourself, because the betting is so competitive. There's a number of the finals, so either the West Speed final or the regional championship final, which is basically they've had heats in all different locations like Kalgoorlie, Geraldton, Albany, and they all culminate in the $100,000 feature for the road to Ascot, which it can make sort of assessing all the form so difficult, knowing, you know, which one was the strong form reference and which one do you want to be with. So it's a pretty competitive affair from that perspective. I thought race number five, Resort Man, if Resort Man had have drawn a gate, you'd be getting a lot shorter price. But given that he drew barrier 12, there's been a couple scratching, so he's come in a couple, which is handy. He went back first up. Kirriel really had to restrain him, and he still managed to hit the line really well. It doesn't read all that well on paper, but I think the run had plenty of merit. And tomorrow I think he'll be able to roll forward. So I think Resort Man in race number five is one of the best of the day.
All right. And for me, I like Sassy Trader in the first at $2.35 do we call him Lacca Ramoli or is it Ladder Ramoli?
Yeah,
is
the cute Lacta Ramoli.
Right, Lacta. Okay.
His nickname
beautiful.
Is Lucky. So just call Lucky. Him Lucky Ramoli. Yep.
That sounds a lot easier. Then we know who he is. So I reckon he can kick us off on a winning note in the first for Tab Touch. Thanks very much for joining us, Britt. Really appreciate your time tonight. Take care. And we'll see you on Sky Racing. Thanks for your time.
Hopefully you find plenty of winners.
Good on you. Britt Taylor here on Sports Day. We'll clear a commitment on the other side. I'll come back and I'll update the cricket as we head to the 7 o'clock news. Welcome back to Sports Day. Nice to have your company here on the program, and it is great to have the new CEO of Rugby WA. Hasn't started yet. Nathan Charles joins us on the program. Welcome, mate. How are you? Congratulations on the new job.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys, and thanks for having me on tonight. Always a pleasure to join you.
Now, you're a bloke who's gone and strutted his stuff, of course, on the field, representing our Western Force from 2010 to 16 before you went to the dark side and went to play for the Rebels. But you've obviously been knocked around the head and got your common sense, and you've come back to the place where you started.
Well, I spent a few years in Europe in between, but, came back via the Rebels for a very short period of time, and Perth's home for me now. I've been here since 2010, as you mentioned, and it's just a beautiful place, beautiful lifestyle, and I love the rugby community, so it was a massive draw card.
Before we get onto the admin side, what would be some of the highlights throughout your playing career?
Oh, look, it's hard to go past your debut. I still remember my Western Force debut against the Stormers, and we actually won that game with a field goal after the buzzer, and that was in front of a sellout. Couple of games later, we beat the Crusaders for the first time. And then my Wallabies debut in 2014 was pretty special. So, mate, it's hard to pinpoint one. There are a number of memorable moments. And, I think we'd be here all night if I started talking about them. So I'll just leave it to those three for the time being.
We do have all night. If you want to talk about yourself all night, we can do that. But we better move on. We've got to talk about the admin side. Is this something that you always thought you'd progress to after your playing career?
Mate, it is. Whilst I was playing, I'm a realist, and I always knew that rugby or professional sport doesn't last forever. So I always made it a priority to educate myself, to get as much experience as possible. And, sport's been a huge part of my life. you know, physically, mentally, and in particular for my health. And I think rugby shaped the person who I am today. And as I mentioned before, it's got such a strong hold on myself as a person. I love it that much that I always wanted to be involved. And, you know, I'm absolutely ecstatic to be able to given the opportunity to, you know, I guess take on the role of CEO and take this sport forward and just keep evolving into hopefully a powerhouse state.
And you enter at a pretty exciting time. It has been challenging, as you know, for the Western Force and rugby in this state as well. But, you know, given the recent news about the Western Force going back into the national competition and the Trans-Tasman competition, you'd have to say it's a pretty exciting time.
And I think rugby's in a really great time at the moment. I think we have been through a few dark years over recent times, and we're coming out the other side now. You know, the broadcast deal that was... you know, conveyed the other week with the performances of the Wallabies and the youth that's coming through, as you mentioned, the Western Force coming back into a Super Rugby competition, which I think is, they just have to be in there. I mean, I think from a community point of view, but also from a performance point of view, there's half the country over here. We've got some talented players to come through, so... Absolute opportunistic time, and I think it's a fantastic time to be involved in rugby.
It was illogical kicking us out in the first time, Nathan, to be perfectly and brutally honest, mate. I think you'd probably agree. You know, when I look at the quality and calibre of players that had given up their lives, like yourself, moving from the East Coast and in Sydney, where, you know, you grew up, that was your place of birth, to make your home here, and for you to stand here tonight and be speaking so fondly of Western Australia and to have such great support with the Sea of Blue, to actually... Just shut the club down was a travesty, really. And I'm so grateful that Twiggy Forrest did what he did. And I think that, you know, given that Raylene Castle's gone and the executives changed and all of those steps have been put into play, and maybe this pandemic has been a really important step to reshaping the sport, and let's hope that it does thrive because, as you say, I think it's looking like it's in a pretty good place.
Yeah, well, a lot of people heard what I'm about to say a million times before. I'm a huge believer that things happen for a reason. You know, there are a lot of things that happen behind the scenes that came to the reason of the Western Force being taken out of the Super Rugby competition. Now, like, I know a lot of us are not privy to a lot of those reasons, yet my personal opinion is I still didn't agree with the decision, taking half the country away from rugby. Also, you know, obviously I'm extremely biased towards the Force. It was my a large amount of my professional career and my history was involved there. But as you mentioned, you know, this pandemic is as unfortunate as it is. I think it's really given us a time to reevaluate the importance, the priorities and where we need to go and the direction that needs to be taken. I think in the meantime, what Twiggy's done in regards to GRR and including Asia Pacific regions, it's opened up another market, and there's a hunger for it. So, as bad as it was getting eliminated from Super Rugby, I think it's opened up other opportunities. And you know, I always try and look at the silver linings, and I think WA is in a very opportunistic place, one location, but two, the timing that we have now with the team the Force is building and the leverage that can be used from that in a community standpoint, I think is endless. So I'm extremely excited for the role that I'm going to be stepping into and the opportunities that are going to be there. And I'm also really excited for the future of rugby in WA.
Nathan, we had a chat about the costs associated with soccer in this country. What about the costs associated with junior rugby here in Western Australia, and how are the participation numbers?
Look, I'm going to be honest, I'm not in a position to be able to talk about those numbers because I just don't have the facts in front of me. So it'd be remiss of me to discuss something that I'm not fully across. I do know that there was a big impact from the Force being taken out of the Super Rugby competition, and that hit numbers in the community pretty hard. So, you know, with the reinstatement of them, I'm hoping those numbers are going to increase and increase dramatically. But what I can say about junior rugby and the importance of it, I played since I was 5 years old. And what it taught me was not just coordination and skill, but it also taught me life lessons and a lot of transferable skills. Being around people, being around your mates, having to deal with ups and downs, and also taking on, you know, criticism, constructive criticism, feedback from your coaches and whatnot from a young age, although very positive at a young age. It teaches you a lot about life. And as I mentioned, it's not just about the skill and coordination and playing the game. It's actually about the associated benefits from playing a team sport like rugby. So I'm a huge advocate, and I know there are a number of advocates out there in the WA community in particular.
So, mate, when do you actually take up arms? When do you head to the office and start to ply your craft?
Well, I'd love to go in there tomorrow, but no, officially February 1st is my start date. But I'm going to look to sort of get my teeth into some documents and information sooner rather than later. And Bob Hunter, the current CEO, has already reached out, and we're going to sit down at some stage and talk about a handover, what it looks like. And he's been excellent, and you know what he has done in the time, in these difficult times, can't go unnoticed. So, you know, just a big shout out to Bob Hunter as well, and in the job that he's done in keeping Rugby WA alive. I think that's really important to acknowledge.
Yeah, it is, mate. Really nice to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing a few minutes with us tonight, mate. And we'll have a chat to you down the track. Thank you, mate.
Thanks, guys. Cheers.
Nathan Charles, the CEO of Rugby WA. Great appointment there. We need to clear a commitment. On the other side, we will come back and have a chat to Justin Prentice. Hayes and I are part of a horse. We've got 5%. We want you to be part of it with us and come and have some fun down there at Gloucester Park. We'll talk to the trainer of our horse after this here on Sports. Welcome back to Sports Day, and if you've been tuned in for the last month, we've been talking about a horse that Hayes and I have become part of. It's called Dream Walker. It's very well bred from a New Zealand family, and we're aiming for the $100,000 sales classic at Gloucester Park in January, or at least I believe we are. So I thought, Hayes, why not get the trainer of the horse, Justin Prentice, on the program to just tell us how the horse is progressing, because it's in his stable. Justin, welcome.
Yeah, thanks, boys. Thanks for having me on.
Great to have you on the program, mate. Well, just tell us about Dream Walker. How is the horse coming along?
Yeah, he's doing everything well so far. I've had one prep with him, and he's had about 5 weeks work in his second prep. Just started doing some pace work again, but yeah, he's done everything I've asked of him so far, and yeah, everything's aiming towards the sale classic, like you mentioned.
Can you take us through the sale process, the selection process for you, and why you selected this champion?
Oh, I do a lot of my crosses, and then I just work through with Rads from Chops End, and the dam line sort of picks itself on paper. It's outstanding family from New Zealand, like you mentioned, and he's by a son of Some Beach Somewhere, and that cross to the Better's Delight mares just works perfect. It's been very successful, and I thought he looked like a nice early going type. So yeah, hopefully we can get him up nice and early from the early 2-year-old races and for that sales race. But he's a confirmation wise and everything, he ticked all the boxes.
So what's the process with a horse once you purchase it? What happens from there? Is there a pre-training element that a horse needs to go through?
Yeah, he goes to the breaker. So Chris Blossett broke mine in this year and done a fantastic job. So they're there for about 6 to 8 weeks. And then they just at our property down in Boyne up for, he had about 6 weeks off. And then I took him for his next prep. So he had about 8 to 10 weeks work, and yeah, it's more just about education than anything. You don't get a huge guide on how fast they are yet, but just as long as they do everything right and their manners are good, that's the main thing.
And you've had a pretty good record, though, in recent times with some of these juvenile races?
Yeah, it's something that, we penciled in a while ago, sort of as the business plan for my stable, to try and target the juveniles and try and get the big money early. And yeah, it's worked good so far, so hopefully it can continue.
And when you have a look at the opportunity here, Hayes and I have got a 5% share in Trotsind Syndicate number 19, everyone. If you do want to get involved, you can contact Mick Radley at Gloucester Park. But do you know how many shares are left? Have we still got a couple to sell, or are we sold out yet?
Oh, I'm not 100% sure. I haven't spoken to Rad, but yeah, he runs all that. But I know he's pretty popular, so there's probably a few left, but not too many. They're going pretty quick, I think.
All right. For those of you that want the vital information, it is $3,400 for a 5% share. It's all inclusive for the cost of the first 12 months, including the purchase price, the breaking in, which is what Justin is doing right now, the insurance and the training fees, which is what he is also going to be paid for doing, and his expertise. Look, you've got a very impressive career record yourself, 560 wins, including 10 winners of Group 1 racing when it comes to two-year-old races. What is, I suppose, the hardest part about getting young horses going early?
Probably the education more than anything. It's probably the hardest part, makes it the most sort of satisfying as well. Obviously, you've got to pick them out. We go look at them at the farm sort of before they get to the sales, and then, yeah, pick our finer ones and put prices on them, and away we go. And, yeah, I think probably just to educate them and get them, you know, they go that quick these days that they can't really be doing anything wrong, and get them to go as straight as they can and pace as well as they can. And yeah, that's what makes it so satisfying at the end when we can get the big money.
For anyone who wants to invest, syndicate members receive an update from the trainer. What does that encompass?
Usually I'll send out either a voice recording or some videos. Once they're up and doing some decent work, I'll send some videos of some hobble work at my place in Boyna. Yeah, like I said, voice recordings and then just emails that I'll send to Tanya, and she'll send out to the Trotsind members.
We don't ask for much, but is this horse as good as Chicago Bull or Baltic Eagle?
I can't promise you that.
Oh. But a fair chance, though. I think we've got to be in it to win it, and we're going to be going for the big races. But the WA Pacing Cup next week, have you got a runner in that? No doubt Chicago Bull will be very hard to dismantle.
Yeah, he will. He's a superstar and a champion. And, yeah, I'll have Jack Farthing in it. He ran fifth in the Fremantle Cup. So, yeah, we're hoping for a good draw on Tuesday. And yeah, we'll try and chase Bully around next Friday.
Thank you, Justin. Very nice to have you on the program, mate. Take care. And hopefully we'll see you next Friday. Hayes and I are going to stick our heads in, I think. Okay?
Yeah, no worries. Sounds good. Thanks very much.
Good on you, Justin Prentice there. And if you want to become a racehorse owner with our team at Gloucester Park, they are giving away a share in Dreamwalker, which we've spoken about, and we have an opportunity for you tonight. So the website is where you need to go for all of the details to see our Sports Day Facebook page on how you can win. Welcome back to Sports Day and the giant performance of the day. Well, let's hope that this young man's name gets called out when it comes to the national draft that's just around the corner for Giant Bicycles. We're still riding with you. It is Heath Chapman we're talking to tonight here on Sports Day. Welcome, mate. How are you going?
Good, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, nice to have you on the show, mate. Where are you going to be for the draft?
Where? Did you say so?
Yeah, where are you going to be?
I think I'll be over my girlfriend's house.
Wow, okay.
Family.
That's good. Now, when it comes to clubs that have spoken to you, can you let us in on who you've had a chat to?
I think the recruiters keep their cards close to their chest, and I've got no idea, to be honest. It's there's still quite a bit to unfold with trading picks and stuff, and yeah, I guess we'll find out.
You're expected to go quite high, but tell us about your season. You went pretty well at West Perth, obviously dominated a number of games, and I love the way you find the footy, averaging 23 disposals across the season.
Yeah, pretty happy with how I went. This season sort of went in just wanting to really enjoy my footy and play consistent footy. And I think I did that pretty well and got a little bit of team success. But obviously, season was cut short a little bit and losing the Premier League final. But, yeah.
Which player across the AFL season do you liken yourself to as a player?
Try and watch a lot of Jordan Ridley from Essendon and Nick Haynes from US. I guess try to mould my game around them a little bit and liken my strengths to them top players.
Then you're going to be a star then, because I love what Jordan Ridley did this year, and of course at GWS he's a gun as well. But do you get a chance to watch some of the footage of these players to really try and emulate exactly what they do?
I don't really do big deep dives into watching footage, and I guess just try to catch as many games as I can in the weekend, and I guess sort of take what I can out of it.
Heath, just tell us about you, mate, growing up, you know, your background. I think you're a city kid, aren't you, mate? Just tell us about, you know, where you started playing your footy.
Yeah, so I grew up in Joondalup, in Perth. Started playing footy, obviously, in Auskick for the local club, Joondalup Kinross, and played all my junior footy there, and slowly started getting involved in West Perth development programs in, you know, around year eight, and went from there, I guess.
Major league debut in round eight against Claremont. That's always nice, mate, isn't it?
Yeah, it was definitely a highlight of my life, and I said a little bit of a dream of mine growing up, obviously supporting them and I guess getting down to watching you know, West Perth as a young fella, and yeah, it was awesome playing for the club that you supported.
How did it feel being out there too, mate? Obviously the Tigers got hold of you that day, but how did it feel being out there? Did you get an idea of the tempo?
I thought I adjusted pretty well. A really good bunch of boys at West Perth, very welcoming, and I guess I just felt a part of the team and thought I adjusted well, and you know, didn't feel out of place out there.
Tell us a bit about your brother Jake, who suffers from a neurological disorder. That's obviously been a challenge for you and your family.
Yep, so a neurological disorder called Angelman syndrome. You know, basically it means he's nonverbal. You know, problem with balance. So if we ever take him out anywhere, he's in a wheelchair. So, you know, there's been restrictions as a family, but I guess mum and dad are really positive people, and you know, it's matured me growing up, and you know, mum and dad are awesome with it, and you know, I wouldn't change it for the world. I guess it's a bit of a blessing in disguise, and yeah, loving a bit.
Obviously, with that, you'd love to stay closer to home so you could be together as a family, and it's unlikely you'll go to the West Coast Eagles because they don't have any early picks, but the Fremantle Dockers are a real possibility. Have you had many good conversations with them?
Had a couple interviews with Freo around midway through the year, but no, I haven't heard anything from them since sort of the first round of interviews. But, yeah, I guess it's all up in the air.
And how long do you think it'll take once you get drafted until you get that opportunity in the AFL? Do you feel like you're ready to go, or you need to still continue to work on your body and size?
I think mentally, and probably a bit of growth physically, but I think mentally and you know, my knowledge of the game and sort of how I can, you know, didn't feel out of place in the league, in my league debut. So I think, you know, definitely once I start training with, you know, AFL players as my teammates and getting to match them and stuff, I'll be right to go. But then, you know, there's always room for improvement and definitely a lot of development that I can do physically to putting a bit more muscle on and get a bit more strength. But, yeah.
Are there any of your mates that are being talked about, or any of the blokes that are being talked about as being picked up this year that you know well that are potentially going to become AFL players?
One of my good mates, Kel Johnson from West Perth, might get a sniff later on in the draft, but you know, my fingers are crossed for him. I really think he should get a shot. And then blokes like Jack Carroll, who I'm, you know, keep in touch with quite a bit. I'm quite close with who also I think will go pretty early.
What about coaches? Who's been some of the most instrumental coaches throughout your career so far?
Definitely one of the most influential would be Ryan Lascock, who coached me for my 2 years at Colts at West Perth. Developed a good relationship with him over them 2 years, and yeah, Zaripa is real good, and yeah, taught me a lot.
Good on you, mate. Thank you very much for talking to us. Take care, and we look forward to your name being called out in the national draft. Good luck.
Thanks very much. Cheers for having me.
Heath Chapman there for Giant Bicycles. Hayes, we're still riding with you. What do you reckon?
Yeah, good player. Should go inside the top 15. We'll be around the mark when Fremantle have their first pick too, Carl. He's not exactly what they want because they've got plenty of tall defenders, but they always say you take the best in the draft. He's a local boy as well, so it wouldn't surprise me if he ended up at Fremantle. But he's got a big future ahead.
Righto, we'll clear a commitment on the other side. We are going to have a chat to the new Perth Glory W coach, Alexander Aparkas, will join us next. Nice to have your company here on Sports Day on this Friday night. Plenty of live sport. We'll update the cricket again shortly, but Alexander Aparkas joins us. He is the Glory W coach, and it's nice to have him on the program. Welcome, Alex. How are you, mate?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Where do we find you tonight?
I'm currently in quarantine. I think it's day 4. Just done my check-in on the app and enjoying being indoors here in Applecross.
All right, mate. Now, who's running the ship then while you've been locked up there?
They're very fortunate. We've got good support staff at the moment on the field with the players. I think they're getting ready for training now as we speak, probably putting the cones out. But yeah, no, it's just we've got to keep going, and there's a lot of planning that's happened during the day to make sure that the training represents hopefully what we want.
Congratulations on the role, Alex. Can you just tell our listeners and ourselves a bit more about, firstly, your playing career?
Yeah, okay. Well, not much to say then. No, look, I was playing NPL back in Sydney up until about the age of 22, 23, just when I was sort of finishing my uni degree. And then I sort of realised that playing professionally wasn't going to happen, and that's totally fine. But I wanted to be involved in the game professionally in whatever capacity that was going to be. And I think I made the decision. I had that sort of appreciation for education and working with players. So I thought coaching was the way to go. And yeah, 23, I've been coaching ever since. Stopped playing relatively young, but not something I've ever thought back on and thought it was a mistake or the wrong decision.
Well, you're very well qualified for the coaching role. At 26, the youngest A-licence accredited coach in the country. You've also done a master's in coaching at Sydney Uni as well. So clearly, as you said, from a young age, you had a passion for it and you've done the work to get there.
Yeah, look, I think that just shows that I had a lot of spare time to do all that qualification. No, look, as I said, I think I made the right decision early on to start the coaching journey. I think you know, quite often it's ex-pros who start coaching once their career's finished as a player at 33, 34. And I thought, well, maybe if I, you know, roll my sleeves up, get the coaching courses done early, and then I went on and did a master's just because I really enjoyed the idea of education, the idea of improving myself. Hopefully that theoretical knowledge would build while I went and did the practical stuff on the field. And yeah, I've just been very fortunate now to be given an opportunity to put it all into practice at the highest level possible.
Now, how much of a say are you having in the recent signings? Yesterday, a quartet of ladies, Sarah Carroll, Patricia Charlembous, Caitlin Douglas and Jamie Lee Gale. And of course, you announced your skipper, Natasha Rigby, this week as well.
Yeah, very exciting for all five. Obviously, they're experienced players. They've got an attachment to the club. They know the competition, and I think for myself, that's going to be really important. The whole competition is going to be somewhat diluted from what it has been previously. So to have the experienced player involved, and for me to have a strong leadership group, is super important. I'm very excited for those players, and I'm very excited for the younger players that will no doubt definitely improve and develop with them around.
Have you had a chance to catch up or have a chat with Bobby Despotoski, who was in the role for 5 years, or are you one that wants to go in with a clean slate and a fresh set of eyes?
No, look, I'm sure if the opportunity presents itself, I'll definitely have a chat. Bobby's a club legend. I remember watching him, you know, when I was watching the A-League back in the day. So, no, I haven't had that opportunity yet, but it's definitely not something that I would be avoiding.
You mentioned that the club, not just the club, but the competition may be a little bit bereft of some of the stars who are obviously playing over there in England at the moment. But the void left by Sam Kerr, who's going to be playing up front as the strikers that are going to hopefully get us a winning score every week?
Yeah, I mean, look, a lot of the teams have lost core players. And I think that's a benefit in the sense that a lot of younger players are going to get opportunities that they probably may not have or maybe not had as much of. So we're really excited. I think we've got a lot of young attacking players. We've got some more senior experienced players within the squad as well. I think between the squad, and it's a whole collective effort, we're going to do our best to overcome the competition. We're going to do our best to create goal scoring opportunities, and we're going to do our best to make sure that we can compete in every game. So I think that with the players we've got currently signed and the ones that are coming, I think we'll be in a good position to compete every week.
When you go back and have a look at your coaching career, who have been some of the mentors that you've had the luxury of enjoying time with?
Yeah, great question. I've been very fortunate. I think I've been supported greatly so far in my sort of coaching journey. I think starting off early then was a gentleman by the name of Kelly Cross. Kelly was heavily involved in FFA and coach education, and then was involved at Sydney FC, where I had a little bit to do with him. No, I should say a lot to do with him in the youth academy. So I've definitely learnt a lot from him, and then very fortunate to work alongside Herriok, who's obviously a big person within the women's game, and she was fantastic for my development. Definitely showed and improved me in certain areas of my coaching because she had the 130 odd caps for Matildas. I didn't have that playing background, so it was good to see that sort of person work in an environment. So I would say to date they've been two of my big mentors, and obviously my family and my really support staff have been good in helping my development.
Can I ask you a personal question here, because you've been through it, Hayes and I haven't. What do they put you through to get a master's degree in coaching sport or sports coaching? What do they put you through to get that?
Yeah, no, it's well, there's a lot of reading, believe it or not. You'd think if you're doing anything related to sports, you'd be out on the grass. But no, it's there's a lot of theoretical components to it. I think, you know, the way education and coaching are going, they sort of go hand in hand. So that master's degree pretty much just allows you to understand what are the theories from a scientific point of view and how to effectively communicate, how to get messages across, how to build an environment, how to build the right culture, and certain principles like that. So you get given all the opportunities to go through the theory, and then you put it into practice by creating a coaching philosophy. So for me, it was really good. I think where you have that theoretical foundation, the practical stuff becomes a lot easier.
Brilliant, mate. Nice to have you in Perth. Good luck. We'll have a chat too, I'm sure, as the season gets underway here on Sports Day. We'll be following you and your team's travels as they go through the season. Thanks very much for your time tonight.
Yeah, look, I really appreciate it. Any time. Have a great night.
Good on you. Alexander Aparkas, everyone, the new Glory W coach. Now, let's update the cricket. And in the latest, the Aussies earlier tonight were able to put together a big, big score. 6 for 374 off their 50 overs. Steve Smith scoring a century off just 62 balls, the third fastest century ever. And in reply, India are... Welcome back to Sports Day. One of the news headlines for car sales, number one for cars, is the Wildcats' new overseas recruit. His name is John Mooney. The good part is that he has served his quarantine. He's out and about. He's free and he's roaming Perth. I just wonder if he's causing any trouble yet. John, welcome. How are you going?
Hey, guys. Thank you for having me. You know, I'm very, very excited to be here.
What was the first thing you did when you got out of quarantine?
So Josh Kavanaugh, the strength coach, picked me up from the hotel. Took me around the city a little bit. Took me to my apartment. So just kind of looked around, pretty close to the beach, so I took a nice little walk just to, you know, see some of the beauty here in Perth, so it was great.
Righto, so it sounds like you might be around the Scarborough area, not too far from my joint then, are you?
Yes, sir. Nice, very nice area.
All right, now just take us back to home, mate. What part of the US are you from, and where did you grow up?
So I'm from Florida, a little outside Orlando, so pretty close to Disney. And then, yeah, very close to my family there. My family's all there now. You know, obviously love my time in America. But again, very excited to be here in Perth.
Tell us about your time in college with Notre Dame. You played really well, breaking a few elite records, really, when it comes to rebounds. But that experience for you, how was it?
Thank you. No, I appreciate that. I loved my time in college. The past 4 years were great, both on and off the court. I really feel like I grew as a player and as a person. Can't say enough about Notre Dame and how they go about their business, how they go about things. So really feel like it was a good fit for me, and I loved my time there, and certainly feel like, you know, the lessons I learned there will set me up for, you know, as I begin my professional career now and the rest of my life.
How much did you know about the NBL prior to signing? No doubt you've been following the careers of RJ Hampton and LaMelo Ball, who've been part of the Next Generation Stars Academy here in Australia. But did you know much about what the NBL had to offer?
I did. You know, obviously, like you said, with the Next Stars, the traction over in the States has grown. You know, the NBL is gaining popularity over there. And yeah, you know, doing a little bit of research and seeing who has come through the NBL and Australian basketball as a whole, it's extremely competitive. And that was, you know, a main part of my decision was to go to a place where I could really compete and get better. And obviously you have to play against good guys to get better. And you look at the track record that the NBL has, obviously with the younger guys, LaMelo and RJ Hampton, but then you have James Ennis, Bogut, just to name a few, you know, guys who have played here and then played in the NBA. Just shows, you know, how competitive the league is and how, you know, ready you have to be to play.
Do you have an understanding about how good the Perth Wildcats are? They haven't missed the playoffs for about 33 years, and they seem to win championships for fun.
Yeah, that's kind of the idea I got. And just being around the team, you know, I was out of practice these last 2 days, but I was there in the building, you know, watching, you know, how the guys go about their business and how the team operates. And, you know, it's a first-class organization and second to none. Heard nothing but good things, and then seeing it firsthand these last couple of days has been awesome. And, you know, really just can't say enough about the guys, about the entire staff. Really make me feel welcome here. And I'm just super excited to get on the court, hopefully tomorrow and then into next week, joining the team and really getting going.
John, I'm just having a look at a few of the comments on the internet, and Mooney is by far the most underrated player in the country. He plays inside and out. He plays above the rim. He isn't afraid to knock down a jumper, and then goes into a few of your stats. You're literally a perfect fit in the NBA because you're so versatile. Were you disappointed that you didn't get taken in the recent draft?
So yeah, I was. I mean, as an American kid, growing up in America, your dream is always to play in the NBA. You know, I'm a competitor. I want to compete. So, you know, when things didn't go my way, you know, that was disappointing. But it's fuel to the fire, as I like to say. You know, it just kind of motivates me even more. But you know, I'm super fortunate to be in this position I am right now and have this opportunity to start my professional career here in Perth. I don't want to look at it as a backup plan because it's certainly not that. And, you know, my sole focus is on Perth and helping, you know, the team win another championship and win games. That's my first goal and my priority right now. So I'm gonna do whatever it is that I can to help the team win and, you know, work hard with my teammates to do that.
Mate, I have been watching with interest your most recent presidential election, watching sometime in amazement what's unfolded during coronavirus over there, given how it has panned out in our country. How do you feel about your home country and the environment that has been there? I mean, you've obviously lived there. Has it been probably as bad as what has been portrayed to the rest of the world, or particularly to Australia anyway?
I mean, there's certain parts of the country that are, you know, experiencing a little different. You know, where I come from, Central Florida area, you know, is relatively trying to get back to normal. There was definitely a big lockdown there a couple months ago, but, you know, businesses need to stay alive and all that. So it's kind of opened up a little bit more. Certainly want to have safety first and always want to take the precautions, but it's refreshing to be here in, you know, Western Australia where things are pretty much normal. You know, seeing people out without masks and stuff like that is refreshing to see. So, again, that's just that's what very appealing about coming here was, you know, how good you guys have, you know, managed the situation and certainly jumping on it very early. So, yeah, just wish everyone the best during this time, you know, back home and here in Western Australia.
It's refreshing to have you here now. In your discussions with Trevor Gleeson, has he indicated what sort of role you're going to play and what should the Wildcats supporters really look forward to when they talk about John Mooney?
Yeah, just a guy who's going to, you know, bring his lunch pail and his hard hat to work every day. You know, I'm a guy who plays hard and, you know, really likes to compete on the glass and just do whatever it is that the team needs me to do. You know, if Coach Gleeson and the staff want me to play the five, I'll play the five. If they want me to play more of the four, I'll do that. Really just going to take whatever he says and I'm going to try to maximize it and do it at a high level and work extremely hard at it. That's kind of always been my MO. And I come to win, you know, just again, being around the guys the last 2 days, practices are very competitive. And, you know, the track record that the Perth Wildcats have speaks for itself. These guys know what they're doing. And I just want to help out in any way that I can.
Good luck, mate. Thanks for having a chat to us tonight, mate. And we look forward to seeing you on the court.
Of course. Thanks, guys, for having me.
John Mooney, you won't miss him either, Hayes, walking around town at 206 centimetres and 111 kilos, Hayes.
I like him, Carl. He's certainly speaking about the team aspect, which is fantastic, and he wants to be here, and no doubt the Perth Wildcats, they do their homework, and they've probably got another superstar that's going to take this club towards another championship.
Now, car sales every 30 seconds on Car Sales. That's all we've got time for tonight here on Sports Day. It is time now for the 8 o'clock news. We'll see you again from 6 o'clock on Monday.